Welcome to this RCGP podcast on reducing health inequalities in primary care. I'm Professor Margaret Ikpo, GP in East Yorkshire and Vice Chair for Professional Development and Standards at the RCGP. Today I'll be talking to Professor Don Patterson, National Clinical Advisor for Technology Enhanced Learning, Chair of the RCGP Health Inequalities Special Interest Group and Founder and Volunteer and Chief Executive at Fair Health, and a GP in Doncaster. Thank you for joining us today, Dom.
Thanks, Margaret. It's a real pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk about this incredibly important topic.
So, addressing health inequalities is an important priority for the RCGP and our chair, Professor Camilla Hawthorne. Why should we worry about the health inequalities gap? Are you able to give us some examples, Dom, of how they affect health outcomes?
Well, Margaret, perhaps I'll begin with looking at NHS England's definition of health inequalities. Health inequalities are unfair and avoidable differences in health across the population and between different groups in society. They arise because of the conditions in which we're born, grow, live, work, and age. So I just want to highlight from that definition, these are differences in health outcomes that are unfair and avoidable. I live about a mile from my practice, and our boundary covers areas of poverty and relative affluence. When I take my dog for a walk, as I pass the houses, there's about a 10-year difference in average life expectancy for the people living in the affluent areas versus the poor areas. And the gap in healthy life expectancy, which is how long you can expect to live before you develop a serious illness, well, that's more like 20 years. I did mention poverty just then, and poverty and health inequalities are inextricably linked. Poverty is about a lack of financial resource to provide for basic human needs like food or shelter. And our practice, like many now, regularly donates to local food banks. And the use of these has grown by necessity in the past years as the rate of poverty has increased in the UK. Sometimes when we think about health inequalities, though, rather than poverty, we talk about socioeconomic deprivation. And this helps us consider some of the wider determinants of health. So my patients from deprived areas are less able to access services like green space, education, employment opportunities. They're also more likely to smoke, be obese, and to experience crime. So to help understand these factors, I often think about a patient I know really well. She was born in the same hospital as me in the city of Doncaster, just a few months apart, but we've got very different lives and very different health. She's a single mum who lives with her four kids in a small council house. She's unemployed and spends her time largely caring for her kids who are aged between 4 and 9. She's experienced a lot of trauma through her life, adverse childhood experience, and she's had to flee domestic violence. She has no family locally, really, and few friends. Her house backs onto a motorway, and so her family is exposed to lots of pollution, and she lives in an area where drug use and crime are prevalent. Green space for her is half an hour's walk away. She relies on benefits and she can only afford to feed the family ready meals and processed food. Perhaps as a consequence, she's obese, she smokes, she has high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes and likely heart disease. She loves her children though more than anything and she's a dedicated, caring mother. Just to finish, there are some other striking examples though of how health inequalities impact on particular groups. For example, black women are 4 times more likely to die during pregnancy and in the first year postpartum. Homeless people are more likely to die young, with an average age of death of 30 years lower than the general population. A homeless woman's average age of death is 43. Irish travellers are 6 times more likely to die from suicide than the general population. 52% of LGBTQIA+ people have experienced depression, compared with 16% in the general population. People with a learning disability and autistic people die 20 to 26 years younger than the general population. All of these statistics and the story of the patient I just shared really highlight the reality of health inequalities for our patients.
These are stark statistics, Dom, and they do resonate strongly with me because I work in a coastal community in Hull. And as we know from our CMO's report, Professor Chris Whitty, from about 3 years ago, he described coastal communities as having some of the worst health outcomes in England. My own community was built around a fishing community, which no longer exists, so we have a high rate of unemployment. Professor Whitty also talked about preventable ill health. And last week I heard him speak at a Shelford annual event where he described that sometimes as clinicians, our focus is sometimes on maintaining the quantity of life and not the quality. And when you combine that with the inequitable allocation of funding to deprived areas and workforce challenges, although locally we strive to do our bit, as it were, to tackle health inequalities, we do need a national strategy. A recent paper by Professor Hawthorne and the director of the National Healthcare Inequalities Improvement Programme, Professor Bola Owalabi, have mentioned the Core 20 plus 5 approach that NHS England devised to reduce health inequalities. Can you introduce our listeners to this and maybe talk about how the devolved countries are tackling this issue?
Thanks, Margaret. Yeah, that paper is a really good read. I recommend it to people. It makes a really compelling case for tackling inequalities. And it talks about healthcare inequalities in terms of differences in access, experience, and outcomes. It also makes the point that tackling health inequalities can feel really overwhelming. And if we don't target our resources and focus our actions, it can be difficult to make a difference. It suggests that we use a quality improvement-based approach to tackling inequalities and also highlights the importance of community links and co-production. Core 20 plus 5 is designed to support systems to deliver targeted actions to address health inequalities. It talks about focusing on the most deprived 20% of the population, plus groups that the local system has chosen as experiencing particularly poor outcomes. It also suggests focusing on some key areas like maternity, severe mental illness, chronic respiratory disease, early cancer diagnosis, and hypertension case finding. There's a version for children and young people that you can look up as well. In the other devolved nations, Scotland's got a Fairer Scotland duty, which is a legal duty to consider health inequalities. And I think we're starting to see that now spreading out to inform health policy. Northern Ireland and Wales have got similar strategic approaches, and there's real evidence of some great local work by GPs and teams in those areas, particularly when we look at the Deep End movement, which is a grassroots movement in primary care where people come together to try and address health inequalities.
Thank you. Now that we've established the importance of the challenge to improve health inequalities on a national level and in the devolved nations as you've described, can you suggest a few activities that individual practices can do to find out about the level of health inequalities within their own communities?
Of course. So tackling health inequalities obviously is really important, and there's a financial and moral case, but often it can be hard to turn the desire to do something into practical action. You know, we can find it hard to understand if and how we can make a difference. But I think that, as with so many things, if we all collectively take small actions, the cumulative effect can be really powerful. And the actions that we take here have really got potential to improve the lives of our patients who most need us. I think I'd start by getting to know your population. Use the data and tools that are available to you to understand your patients and your population, the demographics, social determinants of health, lifestyle factors, immunization rates, disease prevalence, and screening data. But also, I think, remember to see all of your patients as people, so part of humanity with unique identities, experience, and needs, so not just as statistics. I think you should also really get to know your community. Do you understand the lives of your patients, the challenges they face, the resources that are available to them? If you can, maybe spend some time with a social prescribing worker. Understand what community assets are available to support your patients, health, social, and third sector organisations such as community groups and charities. You might think about how people access your services and the patient journey. Whose needs are you really meeting? And who might you be excluding, whether that's consciously or unconsciously? How do people make appointments to see you? Think about things like digital poverty, difficulties with English. Taking a quality improvement methodology to adjust the services that you provide in response to your patients' needs can really help. So you might look to increase uptake of cancer screening or target blood pressure management and smoking cessation to disadvantaged patient groups. Maybe you can educate yourself. So learn about health inequalities, inclusion health, population health, cultural competence, adverse childhood experience, trauma-informed care. You can find relevant learning about all of this on the RCGP's Health Inequalities Hub, as well as on our Fair Health website, which has got free learning modules, podcasts, and blogs. Then maybe share that knowledge within your teams. If you're interested and passionate about addressing health inequalities, perhaps join with your colleagues on the RCGP's Health Inequalities Forum, where we exchange ideas and resources. And finally, what about getting active and advocating for your patients, speaking up in practice or wider network meetings, sharing your patients' stories and advocating and fighting for them?
Here in Hull, we found that one of the most significant things that we did was to ensure we have a GP lead for health inequalities and offer trailblazer fellowships for our first fives. So as you say, Dom, we've used the data and tools, and this has led us to improve our immunisation rates in children, increase uptake of cervical smears in substance misusers, and increase our engagement with our traveller community. We also encourage our doctors in training to focus on quality improvement projects that address a health inequality. You've given us some great examples of how individual practices have initiated activities on their patch to improve health inequalities. Do you have any others that practitioners can take from an individual standpoint?
A couple of things that we've done in the practice. One is something that we call our focus patient initiative. And what we did was we looked at the postcode data for our patients and identified people that were living in the bottom 20% of postcodes as defined by the index of multiple deprivation. So this is really important because as somebody that has lived and grown up in Doncaster, I know the street names, I know where people live, and I know what it's like in those areas. But for some people, that's not the case. So we then used that information to put a flag on the patient's record, a little green star that sits up in the top corner, and that identifies that person as somebody at risk of poverty, really, because they're living in an area of socioeconomic deprivation. So when you click on that flag, then it opens a template that encourages you to consider taking a social history, to perhaps refer to social prescribing, to do some proactive things like measuring blood pressure, smoking cessation, perhaps diabetes screening. So we found that that sort of focuses people's minds on identifying patients who potentially are less likely to access screening, immunisation, more likely to develop long-term conditions, less able to access care, less able to respond to recalls for long-term conditions, etc. So that's one approach we've taken. The other thing that we've done that I think has made a big difference is something really simple. We've started to offer double appointments for interpreted consultations. So this just gives the practitioner a bit more time to really meet the needs of that person. When you're having an interpreted consultation, as we all know, it can be really challenging in 10 minutes to actually do a good job. So I think having that extra time has really helped us. There's lots of evidence from elsewhere about some really great work that's going on. I know in Lambeth they've done some fantastic work where they've been looking to close the gap for blood pressure management in black and minority ethnic patients. And in Lancashire and South Cumbria ICS, Andy Knox has been leading a Core 20 Plus accelerator program that's led to a 50% increase in health checks by using proactive outreach into the most disadvantaged areas. They've improved cervical screening rates in sex workers. They're doing holistic health checks for asylum seekers and refugees. So there's lots of great work going on across the UK to tackle inequalities that we should celebrate.
Thank you, Dom. You've given us real concrete examples of what we can do to close the gap. I think that's all we've got time for today. My biggest take home is know your patients. They are people, not just a statistic. Use the data and tools at your disposal so we can make better informed decisions to improve our patients' health outcomes. I'd like to say a big thank you to Professor Patterson for joining us. Thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed this RCGP podcast, then please have a look at our RCGP Health Inequalities Hub and join our RCGP Members Forum for Health Inequalities to engage with other healthcare professionals to learn a bit more. For now, goodbye.